Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on, guys? This is Knife Talk. This is the number one knife-related podcast on this German-infested planet, and it's the Christmas episode, you hoes.
Whoop, whoop.
You bunch of hoes. I'm
ho, ho, ho.
A bunch of hoes. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives and Mareko Mamasi, Mamasi Fire Arts. We come here every week, and we tell it how it is. We talk about knife making, DIY, all that stuff, making knives, collecting.
We talk about knife making,
bitches. And then we answer your questions, and then we have listener feedback, and we have all sorts of fun. So this is the Christmas episode, guys. How's everyone feeling?
Is this supposed Christmas to be like our Christmas party?
This is our Christmas party. This is our Christmas party.
End of year Christmas party. Okay. We photocopy our genitals and, you know, we
do
all these things.
Is that what you did in your Christmas parties?
Well, not for me, because I don't go to an office.
Oh, I thought that's what people do.
They get a bit loose in the office, don't they, you know? Yeah. Christmas has started here in the Lockwood house, so kids are off school now. We're done with that. We had all my family over this morning for breakfast to exchange presents, ready for the big day. This afternoon, everybody's going to Amy's family to exchange presents there as well. So it feels as if today is a real Christmas has started.
Awesome.
So that this is shoehorned in the middle. I'm feeling good. I've had a couple of Bucks fizzes.
Had a couple of what?
Feeling good. Bucks fizzes.
What's that?
Do you know?
No, what's
Bucks
that?
Fizz? It's just like a sparkling wine with orange juice.
A screwdriver. Or mimosa. Is that a mimosa?
Yeah,
or
maybe a mimosa. Like a mimosa. A mimosa. Basically, yeah. We've always called them. We've all called them Bucks Fizzes in the UK, yeah.
Oh.
But, so Christmas has begun wholeheartedly.
That's great. Everyone's happy?
Yeah. Everyone's happy. It's cold, and we've got all the heating and the fires are going, and it's proper. Christmas has begun. It started. We're here.
That's great you guys do
four
that
more
before.
Sleeps.
I remember on Christmas Day, we would go to, like, four different houses when I was a kid, and it was a lot.
Much. We don't do that now just because the kids want to be at home with their toys and stuff. So we generally meet up, a few days before and we all exchange that kind of thing. So there's no pressure on the day then, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So that was good because I think that was exactly what we wanted to do. But instead, we were traveling around to eat food with people and get socks for Christmas.
and reused
boxes. And I'm just like, what the fuck are we doing here? I got cool shit at home I want to play with.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much where we've come. But obviously, this is our first year back in the UK for Christmas for a while as well. So it's been nice to, see family and everything like that. My sister, who we're really close with, she's recently bought a house in Spain. So they go off to Spain for Christmas. So hence we got together a bit earlier this year.
Wow,
so.
Look at you. Lockwoods, so, yeah, international Lockwoods, this family.
The international Lockwoods.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So what's going on? What's going on with your Christmases? What are your plans for the
Mareko,
big day?
What's going on?
Things are pretty low key for me. I got plans for some dinner and a little bit of gift exchanging, and that's about it.
That's good.
All about the dinner.
I've gotten better at not being a Scrooge, but I have a hard time with Christmas. I think part of it's my own shit and my upbringing and stuff like that. Not that it was super, I guess not super negative. It's just like we struggle with monetarily growing up. And so, so Christmas was not always the happiest time in our house. Mm, yeah. And, it's going to be good because it's going to be low key. And what's hilarious is like, I love Christmas music, but I'm not the biggest fan of, like, I guess the thing I struggle with is like the commercialism and the constant like selling of consumerism shit during
it's
Christmas
a lot,
time,
yeah.
Rather than just, you know, just getting together with people you care about is what I care about more now. But anyways, that's what I got planned.
You're on brand though, because what I'm seeing, the Grinch is almost taking over Christmas in the UK at the moment. Everything is the Grinch themed, and everything is just like trying to spoil Christmas. I was shopping the other day, and I'd got up early to get out before, you know, the day had started and stuff. So I just had a cap on, like a baseball cap on, because I didn't do my hair and all the rest of it. So I'm shopping, and I could hear footsteps behind me, and somebody knocked my hat off, clean off me. Like, what the hell is this? You turn around, you know, quickly. Turn around, and there's some guy dressed up as the Grinch, and you just see them go around everybody and just sort of, you know, pretending to punch him in the stomach, and he's knocking their hats off. And he's just like, Jesus Christ.
Is this some dude dressed up, or is it part of, like, the store?
I think the shopping center had paid some dude to go around and just, like, fuck with people for the day kind of thing, you know?
Wow.
But
the Grinch is literally taken over. It's everywhere.
I hate that shit. Yeah. I don't want to be part of your pranks. I hate pranks.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I don't want to be part of your fucking pranks. Don't. I'm not interested. I'm not interested in it. You know,
there's a T-shirt to wear this time of year.
That would be good. You should have. I see this. Here's the shirt. A big wreath, big beautiful wreath, and I don't want to be part of your fucking pranks. That's a fucking good T-shirt. I don't want to be part of your fucking pranks. Keep me out of it.
Merry fucking Christmas. Leave me.
So what's the fade
well,
big
know,
day then? What's
you know,
going
we're
on?
Jewish. So it's like we like parts of Christmas. I mean, I've grown, my mother's Catholic, so we've always grown up with Christmas trees. I'm running out to get some groceries, and Hillary wanted me to get some Christmassy stuff to kind of spruce it up for Lila. She's home from college and stuff like that. So we'll get into it. We're going to do the Feast of Seven Fishes with our neighbor who we like, and my old coworker comes over and we cook. That's the night before. And then this year we're going to go out to visit my sister Carrie at her house in kind of Athens, New York. But something pretty, you know, this time of year, you know, you start to think about your year and everything that's happened. We've had a lot of great ups and downs. Professionally, something is coming up that I can't even talk about, but it'll be a milestone for me, which I'm really excited about. In the new year, I'll talk about it more once again.
Oh, cool.
But personally, you know, this year for us was really tough. My sister passed away 4 months ago, and it's been harder on me than I've been letting on. And we just went. Her wife had a, and her art dealer had an art show for Jenny with her older work. And I've been a huge, she and I have been very, you know, working parallel in terms of our sculpture and stuff. So we all went up as a family, brought Carrie up and Lila and my wife, and we all went up and we spent the weekend at my sister's place. And we got to look at her shop, and I posted some videos about the shop, but something pretty wild happened. I was talking to her art dealer for a while, and I really like him. Usually I'll call an art dealer a pimp. In this situation, I'm holding judgment. I like him so far. And he asked me if I could repair a couple of my sister's pieces. And I said, yeah, sure, bring them by. Brought them back to my sister's house. We went down to my sister's shop. I knew where everything was, and I kind of repaired these two sculptures, which is, you know, really kind of easy. And it was really kind of nice being able to, you know, be in my sister's shop and fix my sister's work. And we knew each other's work very intimately, so it was really quite easy.
Yeah,
and then I
nice.
Recently just got asked by my sister's widow if I would finish her unfinished work. So that and then her dealer said the same thing. So on a personal level, that's like, this is one of, like, I would say top five highlights of my life is to be able to kind of finish my sister's unfinished work, and you know, in the vein of how she would have done it and stuff like that. And my other sister Carrie broke my balls and called me an art forger, and that was really funny too. But at the same time, it was this really very valuable opportunity that was given to me. I didn't ask for it, didn't you know want it, and it was really asked for me. So I'm gonna so in probably February, March, I'm gonna go out there, spend a couple days in my sister's shop. Make it in my sister's shop with my sister's tools and repair, you know, look at her, really study her work and see how I can finish him in the vein that she would have done it. So that's like a pretty big that's like I said, top five important things in my life, you know, this. So I'm in a kind of a good space right now. So
nice. Okay. But I mean, I've had a similar kind of thing. So the first sort of 9 months of the year were great, but the last three or four have just been like the worst three or 4 months ever, you know, I've been in a lot of pain and all the rest of it, but you know, New Year's come in and that's a fresh start for everyone, I think. And
yeah. Well, that's why we're going to be doing the All Beef Review the next episode. And we might as well just promote it one more time. I have enough beefs from our wonderful listeners, a lot of new voices, a lot of new faces, new names of great beefs. We're going to take all the beefs from 2025 from the listeners. Could be knife related, might not have to be knife related. Could be funny. You could do audio beefs. I'm looking for audio beefs at the moment. And then the first episode of the year, we're going to read all 2025's beefs from the listeners and then flush them out of our lives. And then, you know, we'll be all squared away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Nice.
Okay. So what do we have planned
For today?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a Christmas topic we could talk about. A Christmas knife making topic. We have great questions. Nice. We have listener feedback and blah, 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 blah. The Christmas topic I thought I would talk about, I was walking the dogs this morning and I was thinking about it. It was just like one of the things that some, especially new knife makers, and we've talked about this in the past. We're going on to our eighth All Beef Review, P.S. Lest anyone think we've missed a year. One of the things that we've talked about is the fact that nowadays, you're especially this time of year, people are looking for gifts. A lot of knife makers are sending knives out as gifts and stuff like that. And the one thing that you're kind of hoping for is a message back saying it's been received or you like the knife. Right? Mm. This is something we get all year long, right? You're spending all this time and energy making this knife as a gift for someone or somebody buying it, and you never know how it was received.
How it's been received,
Do you want to talk a little bit about that, and then we can kind of discuss what's going on in the world and why these things are happening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that the three of us have, you know, made knives for maybe other knife makers as well and things like that, who, you know, have been kind enough to sort of support us, and they, you know, they bought knives and we've sent them off. And it's always that worst thing, waiting to hear. Because, you know, you want to hear that they've got it, but you'd also like, you want their opinion, but at the same time, you're like, oh, fuck. So it's always that nervous feeling when you ship them, and you're like, oh, God, okay. Let's hope it all goes well kind of thing. It's weird because I think a lot of us, and our listeners certainly as well, they will sort of know the customer. You know, we may be selling internationally and all the rest of it, but because there seems to be almost like a community around what we're doing and people buy into us and buy into our work and all the rest of it, it feels a bit more sort of community-led than just, you know, going online and buying something. So I think having sort of feedback and that kind of thing is really nice. But, yeah, it can be really
stressful.
It can be anxiety inducing as well, you know, because you just, oh, Jesus Christ.
I would say for me, you know, I want to know what you think, Barreco. I would say for me, 95% of the knives that go out, I never hear, hey, got the knife, it was great. Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah.
No one says, I don't get any notes. Maybe 95% of the customers who buy my knives don't write anything back. What do you think?
Do you sort of chase, I wouldn't say chase them up, but do you sort of invite feedback? Do you then email them and say, you know, the knife arrived?
But at the same time, part of me is just like, a lot of times, like back in the day when there was a lot more relationship with the custom build, I would think somebody would write back saying, hey, I got the knife, I love it. Or, hey, I got the knife, it's great. Or, hey, I got the knife, I got a problem. I don't get anything. And this is the funny thing that a lot of knife makers talk about. What do you think, Mareko?
Yeah, I think it's hard to not get that feedback. And honestly, a very simple thing that I used to do, not that I necessarily needed a lot of feedback. I more than anything, I just wanted to double make sure that people got their knives. And so after I had seen it was delivered, I wouldn't be on them right away. But like after a couple of days, I just send an email following up and saying, hey, it looks like your knife was delivered. I just want to double make sure that everything showed up and everything looks good. And some people just say, yep, it's here. Thank you. And other people give a lot more. And they're talking about how, oh, it's so great. And I used it to cut everything in the house. And now I don't, now I need to go grocery shopping. I don't have anything left. But unless you follow up like that, you're probably not going to do that because that's an, you're asking for somebody to voluntarily offer extra information when they have their whole other life, their own shit going on. And, yeah. And so asking them for extra voluntarily without actually even asking them, is probably
no,
not gonna
it's
happen.
The expectation that you've spent all this time on this knife and you've met a deadline or you've gotten it out at a specific time, especially nowadays, it's hitting the deadline of getting sure, making sure it goes before Christmas. And then you're expecting, I feel like in our own egos are expecting,
we think we're changing the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly right. They're expecting the Magna Carta, a love note. A note of like, you're so talented and thank you for bestowing me this fucking thing. And it's like, you almost feel like there was a lot of times where, especially earlier, you know, like 10 years ago, I would think, well, maybe they just don't like it enough to send me a message. You know? No, you know what it is?
No.
It's people don't have any fucking manners. But at the same time, I'm getting shirts from L.L. Bean, and I'm not going to write them a thank you note. You know, it's like...
Yeah, exactly. You don't, It's not Victorian times where, you know, you get your stationery out and you say,
Because most very people different. Don't see us as sculptors or artists or this personal connection. They see us as a commodity with a little bit more, you know, a little bit more gusto behind it. You know, this isn't getting a pair of shirts off.
This time of the year, you're just the name on a list as well. You know, you need to buy for them, you need to buy for them, you need to buy for them. Tick them off, move on to the next one.
You might get, like, you know, somebody tags you in a story, you know, and they're cutting something for something like that. But, like, we've had our Christmas, our November and December, this is, like, the best November, December we ever had. And we've sent a pile of stuff on. I'm in the weeds. I'm in the weeds until February. And I'm working every. Usually I'll take a week off in between Christmas and New Year's to work on something fun. I don't have time for that. I got to keep moving. I'm fucking killed. And I know how many knives went out this past year. And I know that I didn't get. You know, I got a couple nice messages, and it arrived. It arrived on time and stuff like that. But generally speaking, it's like it arrives, and then you just like that's it. You know.
I see that turnip of a leader of yours has said that you're going to get the day after Christmas Day as a national holiday now. I can't believe you don't already.
What are you talking about?
That's not a holiday for you. The day after Christmas Day.
The day Boxing after Day. Christmas Day.
Boxing Day. Boxing Day. Is that a national holiday
you mean
for you?
Saturday?
It's not even Saturday. It's Friday.
The day after Christmas is on Thursday. And then Christmas Day is Thursday, and Friday, right?
Yes. So I'm talking about Friday, Boxing Day. Yes, So is that not normally a holiday for you?
Some people take off. I mean, it's not you don't need the government to tell you when you can take time off. You know, that's ridiculous.
But literally, Europe shuts down for a week between Christmas and New Year.
Here's the hilarious thing:
unless you
there are so many holidays, it's a national holiday. Banks are closed, or the post office is closed. No one's going off to McDonald's and locking the doors. You know, it's like if you have a small business and you got to work, you got to work. The days I'm taking off are going to be correlated with the days that my wife is taking off so I can spend time with my wife and daughter. But other than that, I'm going to be working more than I ever have for Christmas. And I don't need some fucking government telling me, I can't work today. You know, the President Trump don't want me to work today. Fuck out of here. I'll do whatever the fuck I want. That's a real American.
No, I think
that's a real American right there. That's a real American. Don't tell me when I can't work and kill myself.
The old American holiday is no holiday.
Don't tell me when I'm taking vacation, you motherfuckers, you.
The perfect example of American exceptionalism. I think the thing that most people do after the holidays, fucking national take shit back to the store day and return stuff, get your money back. There are a lot of company, and I'm sure they have it over in Europe too, in the UK. But a lot of stores have after Christmas sales, which is essentially bring your shit back you don't like and come get a discount on some other stuff that you might actually like for Christmas.
Yeah,
it's just perpetuates the consumerism side of things.
That's
stuff. You gotta pay bills, right?
Yeah, stop spots.
You gotta pay the bills.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had a sale. We've just finished our sale on Friday, thank God. I mean, it's been great, but it's like, you know, I'm fucking tied up. I'm tied up in February, dude.
Yeah.
Great.
Wow. Okay. Should we do some questions? Okay. If you've got questions, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Send them through. Again, we're still looking for beefs, especially audio beefs for our All Beef Review for the end of the year. So if you've got questions for us, we are Knife Talk Podcast. And Kian Zimmerman has done exactly that. He's got a question about sharpening. He says, I recently had a guy drop off butcher knives for sharpening. Three of them were Victorionix and narrow semi-stiff boning knives. He said, yeah, that's the real name. Semi-stiff boning knives.
You named it.
I couldn't get an edge on them for the life of me.
Semi-stiff.
Spent a lot of time.
Some Viagra. I don't know what to tell you.
Spent a lot of time making sure I got a 20-degree angle and sharpened to the apex on the 2x72 and the Tormek. Knife wouldn't not even cut paper. Can you explain this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so three of them were stiff boning knives. So I assume very hard, very thin, though. I mean, a stiff boning knife, I can't really imagine it. I can't imagine the knife.
Yeah, it looks like a fillet knife. It's just kind of a little bit, the spine is burlier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Couldn't get an edge on them for the life of me. Spent a lot of time making sure I got a 20-degree angle and sharpened at the apex of the 2x72 and the Tormek. Couldn't cut paper. Any suggestions as to why?
Mm-hmm. I'd be curious. So when we talk about sharpening angles, like he said, a 20-degree angle, but that's not clear to me what the hell he's talking about, because that can either mean that altogether sharpened, after both sides have been sharpened, the inclusive sharpening bezel is 20 degrees. Or when people say, I sharpen at a 20-degree angle, they're referring to each side is 20 degrees. And if it's 20 degrees each side, that's kind of a steep angle, even for a hard-use knife.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
I think even like hard use knives like hunters and bowies are only being sharpened at a 30-degree angle. And if you're going more than that, you're not going to get kind of like that shaving edge, or what is he saying? I can't get it to sharp cut paper. Even cutting paper can be tricky. Now, it depends on the type of paper. If you're using newspaper print, that's going to be difficult with an overall 40-degree angle, because you're sharpening at 22 degrees each side. But printer paper, you should be able to cut just fine. If you are doing a 40-degree angle overall, as long as you're sharpening all at the same angles and you're taking the burr off and polishing that burr off and all, everything, you should be able to get an edge that will cut that printer paper. And if it's not happening, the only thing I can think is that you're just not getting that burr off, or you're not hitting that apex every time you're stepping up the sharpening to to sharpen things properly, I guess.
Well, let's CSI the whole thing, because there's a lot more in the what he's saying. Boning knives in general. So what I said in the beginning is it's a thicker piece of the spine is going to be thicker. It's just going to be either the
Go ahead. I'm sort of wondering whether it's been sharpened a lot in the past and it's risen right up now, you know. So you've got a really thick edge as well. So by the time you put a 20-degree each side, it's looking more like an axe.
I wonder also if a Victorinox isn't tapered. Like those thin knives. So a boning knife is like, you know, it's not like a chef's knife where you have a 2-inch heel. So a boning knife, you have like under, you know, inch to under an inch to maybe even like 3/4 of an inch from the spine to the cutting edge. So if it and I'm thinking of Victorinox, are they even tapering a knife like that? Are they even putting bevels on either side of those?
Possibly if it's really well. I mean, he's saying it's
those Victor knives are
semi-rigid,
cheap, right?
So it's 15. Right,
I mean, don't you think that they're just don't you think that they're just like stamping them out, and putting an edge on them?
Possibly. That's possible, but it still comes down to the sharpening bevel. Because if you like look at chisels, like woodworking chisels or wood turning chisels, like those are thick pieces of metal that have a single bevel from the full thickness of like 1/4 of an inch. But the angle that they're sharpened at makes them so that they can be shaving sharp.
Yeah.
So I think it ultimately, no matter how thick the blade is, it comes down to the angle that they're sharpened at. And so I still think there must be an issue with the angle that he's sharpening at. If he's not doing the 40-degree overall with a 20-degree on each side, if he is doing a 20-degree inclusive sharpening angle, then that should be able to cut paper all day just fine.
Easily,
I would also say that 20 degrees for a hard use knife, like a boning knife that is potentially coming into contact with actual bones or joints or cutting into joints to kind of break them apart, that is not the ideal angle for that knife. That's a pretty delicate angle, and you might want to bump that up to more to that 30 degree, like I was saying earlier. But even if you are sharpening at 20-degree inclusively, you should very easily be able to cut in the paper. And the only reason I can think that you're not, and I've had this happen to me before as well, is just that I'm not polishing that burr away, that edge, properly. Yeah. And I remember when I first started offering a sharpening service, I had a Victorinox, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? I cannot get this thing to take an edge. And I just wasn't refining that edge properly for it to actually be able to cut through paper. And it was just a massive just back and forth until I finally got it. But it was a pain.
Do you think
a
lot of knife sharpener people sharpening knives also don't spend enough time on the coarse grind to be able to establish a proper apex before you start using the smoother grits to kind of polish that edge? Part of me feels as though if you're not really establishing that wire edge, that wire burr, and you're just trying to like tune it up on a, you know, on a very smooth stone or something like that, you're just kind of polishing something that's not really even there yet.
Yeah. You got to go there to come back. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely something I've done in the past, because I want to, my goal as a sharpener is ideal to give it a new edge, but by removing as minimal material as possible. And I'll start with the same grit that I'm doing everything else at, which is usually like either a 220 or a 150. But if it needs more to establish that geometry, I don't know until I realize that those lower grits aren't just not doing it. And I know it's not doing it because it's taking a long time. And so I'm like, ah, shit, I need to step down to maybe a 60 grit just to get that as geometry established, and then stepping it up from there to 150 to 220 before finishing with polishing mops or a buffing wheel or finishing on a stone. And I think that is definitely a mistake I've made in the past, and I wouldn't be surprised if others are having.
I will say this: if you're using a Tormek, I do the Tormek a little bit different than other people. I know that Tormek, they like it when they don't care, really. It's really whatever you want to do. But sometimes, and I don't know what you do, Craig, with your Tormek, but I don't. A lot of the Tormeks, they have the wheel spinning towards you, and I like the wheel spinning away from me for a couple of reasons. One is I don't want it to possibly catch and then kind of flip around and then, destroy the edge. But also, you'll maintain the wire burr. You'll be able to see the wire burr if the wheel is spinning away from you. And that's a telltale sign for me that I'm, you know, polishing the burr without, you know, removing it. So if you create the wire burr with the Tormach, if you're having the wheel spin away from you, you'll keep that little beard. The beard will hang on a lot more because it's the water's making it go, and then you're hanging it at the right angle and you can hold on to it throughout the grit. So that might be a way for you to kind of know that when you're, you know, doing it, you need a visual aid to help you while you're grinding. Yeah. I think that being able to see the wire edge is the most important thing.
Yeah, and the Tormach's great for that, actually, because you see the water and you see the flow of the water changing as the blade's hitting the wheel. So you can make sure you're not lifting it. You know, you can make sure you've got the whole section is the water's flooding now nicely. But yeah, with the Tormach, you can set that. They're like a guide. You can have it in front of you or you can have it on top. So you can have either the wheel.
Yeah, you can have the wheel going whatever.
But yeah, I have it the same way with the wheel going away from me. And you can check that flow of water just to make sure you're flat on there and that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And by the way, if you're listening and you haven't used a Tormach, get yourself a Tormach because it's repeatable. You can get these sharp edges, really repeatable. You can grade the stone to different grits. They're great. I know Jeff got a bunch of them. I use them. They're great. Tormach. Tormach.com.
3, 4, 5, 6. Six.
Oh, my God.
They gave me the six. Culinary ones. And when I had Carl friends down at the shop for a couple days, he showed me how to use the ones like for the non-professional, for the ones for in your kitchen, and they're really great. I mean, it's just like they've really thought about a lot of funny things. Like they have the, what is it, the wheel, the rubber wheel. It's not a rubber wheel. It's like the wheel for the for honing, and it's vegan.
Yeah.
So like I said to him, like, well, what do you do if like you don't want rubber or you don't want this honing wheel falling off onto your countertop or in your food? And he goes, don't worry, it's vegan. Like, fucking vegan. He's like, yeah, vegan, totally. Jesus. Vegan health. It's not microplastics, it's none of that stuff. Shit is vegan.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we went shopping the other day to get some food in for Christmas, and I bought a big cheese board and it said alternative cheeses. And I thought, oh, great, you know, different cheeses to try. Took them home. No, it was fucking vegan cheese.
That's you.
Absolutely fuming. Absolutely fuming.
How much was it?
Yeah. Oh, we paid like 30 quid. It's this big old. This big box of different cheeses. And I thought alternative would mean, okay, there's going to be not the usual suspects, you know? But no, it's all vegan cheese.
So it's all cheese, like nut milk and shit like that. Fucking, exactly. Oh, what did you do? Throw in the fire?
Yeah. No, it's still there in the fruit. You haven't touched it yet.
God,
I haven't touched
it. That is hilarious. Yeah. There are these new little words that we are unaware of that they have them.
Yeah.
Alternative meanings. They had meanings that we knew about. But now they're meanings that were just like, how did you not know that alternative cheese had nothing to do with new choices for you?
Because you're marketing it to cheese lovers, you bastards.
Yeah. I think that's hilarious. You're just like, oh, good. Amy, look, these are alternative cheeses. This is cheeses we've never had before.
Like emo cheeses.
This is what non-binary cheeses. We're all squared away. They should now.
Okay,
just
who's
to
taking,
finish that off.
The next one.
If it's an alternative cheese, it should be spelled Cheez, because it shouldn't be, you know.
Okay.
Like easy
cheese.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. Did you know that in the United States that there is ice cream, like that is not officially ice cream, and they cannot call it ice cream. So like there are these companies that I've been buying ice cream from for my whole life, and if you look on the label, if it doesn't say ice cream on it, it doesn't classify as ice cream. It's like a frozen dessert.
It's got to have a certain milk content or something, is it?
Alternative ice cream. However you identify. Facts. Guys, this next one comes from our man Paul Jansen, GSL. That's Gold Star Listener. Now, this is a topic we've got a lot of feedback on, Mareko, from last episode and the few episodes ago. Is there anything Mareko can do as far as intellectual property rights if he basically developed these different techniques and has messages with this guy talking about how not to share techniques? it seems a very clear theft of Mareko's ideas. Now, just to give a little backstory, Mareko was very vulnerable and honest and talked last week about this guy who's making knives that are very similar to his. And he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Go listen to the last episode. We got a lot of messages in regards to that, Mareko. So in the listener feedback, and I actually got personal messages and people wanting to know a little bit more. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think there is definitely ways that people could pursue this, or I could pursue this, regards to intellectual property and design and stuff like that. But that also costs money. And I don't have that extra money to chase down. I think I messaged this guy. Actually, he initially messaged me when around this production knife. And then I responded to him. And I haven't heard anything back. And I don't know if it's because of last week's episode. And maybe he just assumes that there's nothing to talk about. But I think the thing that really just floors me or kind of just like blows me away is that he's taken a design that I, like I said last week, I've spent a lot of time making knives for somebody actually else before I even started making my own knives, with a very thoughtful approach to how to change things so that they're very uniquely my own style, my own design. And I've done that, especially with like the faceted Western, or what I call a Japanese cowboy handle. And that stuff wouldn't have existed really and had as much visibility if it wasn't for the work that I was doing. And then this guy has made a couple very slight changes, like maybe a 5 or 10% adjustment to where, not even the fact that they have angles, but where those facets land on the handle. And then he's basically like, yeah, it's a brand new thing. And it's like, it's not. It's a very cheap workaround. And I think you would know better, Jeff, but I think in the art world, like, or maybe even Craig, like, you have to change things by like a certain percent. It's like 40 or 60% for it to be considered a completely different piece of work. And it's not like, but there's nothing to really do about it other than say fuck you to this guy and have nothing to do with
it. I remember I was at a postgraduate art critique and there was a dude making work that just looked exactly like my friend's work. And it was like, it wasn't even, it was just like, and it wasn't as if like we said anything, but it was very clear. When there were some comments made, and I think that, you know, no one was going to do anything about it. And if you look at 90s music, especially, I think that music, and I think that it would be interesting to hear Craig's take on all this, is if you look at 90s music, I remember when Nirvana came out and it was so revolutionary, there was another band that was called, I think it was Puddle of Mud. They sounded exactly like Nirvana, like everything about it. And it was just like, how can somebody not know? And this is just like a complete total theft is the wrong word, but it sounded like a complete knockoff of Nirvana. And I wonder what you think in regards to that, because this is something that, you know, trends become something that it becomes like a, well, what do you think, Craig?
That's the thing, is it? Trends become a thing, and then who owns that sort of trend then, I suppose? And, you know, and it is difficult. I think with music, you can always put it down to a mathematical formula, you know? You know they've used a C, they've used an A minor, they've used a G, an F, which millions of songs do, you know? But when you're looking at something that you're making by hand, such as a knife, there's no obvious clear line, you know? You know, if I were to play you a C and Mareko were to play a C where he is, it would sound the same. But if I were to sculpt something that looked like Mareko's, it wouldn't be exactly the same, clearly. But it's all about the intent. This guy has clearly gone out with intent to make a version of Mareko's knife, you know? And how do you prove intent? That's the difficult bit, I think.
It's trying to, you know? I mean, it's weird. I remember years ago when I was making the knife for my friend Carl Ruiz, who passed away. A guy sent me a message saying, you know, you're stealing my designs. And I had to, this dude was just like, where did you get the inspiration for that? I've been doing that for, I had to go back into my archives and send him, pictures archived with dates from, you know, a time before he even started making knives. So it was just like, It was, yeah. And then he backed off. But there is a lot of that. I mean, I know that I've had people who have, made my work, and I see it differently. You know, actually, right now, our friend Josh Smith, Montana Knife Company, is going after a magazine who just started making knives, and allegedly, I don't know the extent of it, but I mean, this guy's, this magazine and is collaborating with this knife company, and it's basically what Josh is alleging is that it's an I'm saying alleging because I'm just like, I'm based off of what
keeping out.
What'd you say? He's basically saying that it's a complete knockoff of a Montana Knife Company knife. And this isn't something that's new. This is something that in general, it happens all the time.
I mean, we've talked about so many times that, if you're making, let's say, a chef knife, there's only so many ways and so many designs that you can do it. And I think everybody's clambering to find something that can be uniquely theirs, which is obviously a huge selling point. It's something that, when you sell it, this is obviously a knife by XYZ, whoever that may be. But just seeing other people going out of their way with intent to purposely copy. I don't know what we can do about it, but I just think there's always going to be dicks in the world, unfortunately.
I know that people when they visit Florentine Kitchen Knives, all of a sudden they come home and next thing you know, it's stacked handle city. It's just like, whoa.
Yes.
Like crazy. Same thing with Lynn Ray. All of a sudden people are making, X-ray knives and they're just kind of like doing a couple little this, little that. Next thing you know, it's like this. It's something that's just going to have to, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's really a whole lot to do about it.
Throw yourself around a little bit, which is okay. We got time to
make it known.
We got time to burn. Time to burn.
I'm amongst friends, and so yeah, I complain and I bitch and moan, but at the same time, there's really ultimately not a whole lot to do about it. It feels like a pretty blatant lack of respect. Like this guy, this company reached out to this guy to do a signature series of knives. He could have done a lot of things, honestly.
Yeah.
He could even done Japanese. He could have done traditional Japanese style blade shapes with traditional Japanese style knife or handles. And the fact that he just put his name on it, and it could have been his signature series. Could have made this, but instead he chose to use this style that he has directly taken inspiration with very, very little modification from my work. And he's also in some of his first initial messages, he's like, oh, I took inspiration from this maker and these other makers as well. Or I've been inspired by their work. And I'm like, but those fucking guys wouldn't have done that if I hadn't done it first.
It still comes
back to me. And so it's just, there's so many things he could have done, but instead he did this thing that's basically a straight ripoff of my work. And it's just I don't know how you can stand by, I don't know how you can stand by that and feel super proud about it. And then secondly, it's cool. This is going to be a flash in the pan for you. And what is it worth? A couple thousand dollars? This guy's making videos about making $7,000 knives. And it's cool. How much are you actually going to get paid out for this? And instead of having some integrity, you're sullying yourself and your reputation with other knife makers in the industry. What the fuck are you doing for a couple bucks?
Yeah.
But whatever. Like Jeff says, people got to pay the bills. I guess that's what he's got to do to pay the bills. But he can also go fuck himself.
That's a good Christmas beef. Let's have a couple extra Christmas beefs. I have a beef with people using the word inspiration. I hate the way they use. I hate knife makers using inspiration. That's some fucking horse shit. It's like the get out of jail free card for stealing. It's like, oh, I was just inspired. Fuck out of here. I was inspired by my sister's work. Our work is nothing like. There's fingerprints of things and colors and contrasts and stuff like that, and there's a relationship because we spoke the same language, but my shit doesn't look like hers. I'm inspired by her to work. I'm inspired her by excitement and things, but not I ain't making little houses. Well, I am now.
Yeah.
My other sister's gonna call me an art forger for the rest of my life. Yeah. I'm not making big decide decisions, Jenny. If you're listening, I'm sitting in her car right now. You're listening to this, Jenny. Don't worry. I'm not going to fuck around. I'm not going to fuck around.
Take the glory. Take
all
the glory.
Last chance for glory, baby. Now, we have, if we want to keep this vein, we have a lot of listener feedback about this, but it's up to you.
Before we do,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Go to it.
I just want to interject with a Christmas beef to get people, you know, getting ready for beefs.
Yeah.
This might just be me, might be my age, might be, you know, the where I'm from, New York. Dudes, you got to stop calling people daddy. You got to stop
calling
other people daddy.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I was at a party, and a friend of mine and I were talking, and he started talking about Daddy Trump. And all I said, we're not talking about politics, and I'm telling you this. I said to this guy.
The record just did
I said to this guy, listen, you vote for who you want to vote for. But don't be fucking saying, don't be calling another man daddy in front of me and think that I think that's cool. Don't call fucking dudes daddy. You got to stop it. I hate that shit. The daddy this, daddy that.
What's
fucking
even more
don't
icky
say
is...
it. Don't say it. It's really, it makes you look weird.
Ladies call their
fucking
partners
hate
daddy.
It.
That's even worse.
Hate that. My daughter never even called me daddy. She called me dad or pop or whatever like that. I hate the sexualization of daddy.
Yeah.
Drives me fucking crazy. It's disgusting, number one. And it's a little incestual, number two. And I hope that ruins it for all of you listeners of this podcast, that when you hear somebody's referring to another person, not your child, not your little child calling you daddy, that's a fucking weird-ass thing. Weird, weird, weird.
I completely agree. Yeah.
Disagree, Mareko, or no?
No. I agree. That's fucking weird. I didn't even know what the hell you were talking.
I've
never heard that.
I've been hearing
before.
Daddy Trump all the time, and I'm like, bros, vote for whoever the fuck you want, but know this. It's super weird. It's fucking super weird.
Yeah.
Super weird. I hate that shit. And it's funny enough, I was saying it in front of a guy who, like, these are all, like, law enforcement guys, and it was at this big law enforcement party, and guy sits down, and I'm standing next to this dude. He must have been, like, 400 pounds. He's just, bit like a bodybuilder. And when I said, listen, you vote for, and I didn't say it to him, he was standing next to me, the guy's like a tower, like a towering I'm a real monster, he's a great guy. And I said, you vote for whoever the the fuck you want, but don't be fucking coming up to me and thinking that I think you're cool by calling another man daddy. And this big dude just started chuckling, you know, because he felt the same way. It's just fucking weird. Yeah. So that's my Christmas beef, dude.
It is so weird.
Don't call me daddy. Don't fucking... I'm not interested.
You've set the bar high. This is a good
beef.
It's
like, doesn't it make you... You hear these videos of, like, women calling men daddy, and it's just like... Is that disgust, though? Is that
terrible. Terrible.
Lyle and I used to have an expression when something was really bad. We called disgusto barfo. Like, if something was really bad,
pretty much.
Disgusto barfo. Yeah. So that is...
Disgusto
barfo. Was something that got to the point where we were just like, what'd you think? She goes, disgusto barfo. And that was it. So when you hear these women go, oh, daddy, fuck you. I'm sorry I even said it. I'm embarrassed that I even said it just now. I hate that shit.
No, I'm with you 100%
right,
with
so
that.
Send in your beefs, ladies and germs.
It's not good. Not good.
What are your feelings on people calling women hot?
I don't like that either. That's the same fucking thing. Mama is so bizarre. You know, I think that when men refer to their wives as mama, I fucking think it's weird. I think that, you know, I'll sometimes when I'm talking to Lila, I don't call my wife Hillary. I'll say, you know, mom said or your mom said, but I won't.
Yeah, sure. As you're
referring to, you know, Hillary. I'm talking to my daughter.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, I'm not going to refer to my wife as her name. That's weird too, you know?
Yeah.
So I say, you know, mom told me we need to go get this, that, the other thing. So she knows who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
but
that's fine.
I don't say ma. Yeah. I don't say mama. Mama?
Your hot mama told me.
Hey, mama, what's for dinner? What the fuck? I don't fucking say mama.
Go ask your hot mama.
Fucking mama? You don't do that in the UK, mama, right? It's mama.
No, we don't, no.
Mom.
I mean, mum is normal, but our kids, because they brought up in France,
I had a friend who has like a 16-year-old son, and his son called him. And this kid's taller than me. Turns to his dad, who I've known for a while, he goes, calls him Papa. And I'm like, what the fuck? Papa?
I'm Papa. I'm Papa.
Yeah. Was it also a little...
Yeah, it was a little something in. They threw a little bit of spin in there. You know, it wasn't just like... My wife... You know, Papa. You know, my sisters called my dad Daddy. They called him Daddy, which my wife used to break their balls about. You're like, you're in your 60s and 70s. You're calling Dad Daddy. It's fucking madness.
But then
they would call my dad Pop, and I would call my dad Dad, or I'd call my dad Pop. I never called him Daddy, and I never fucking called my mother once said to me years ago, she says, if you ever call me Ma, I'm going to kill you. I never called her Ma, you know?
just hot
fucking
mama.
I never say mama. The only time I ever say mama is when I'm listening to that Ozzy song "Mama, I'm Coming Home." But I mean, about it. I hate all that shit. There you go. Yeah. All beef review.
Okay.
Ready to go.
Wait.
We do have feedback. If you want to send us some feedback, we need listener feedback. We need beef feedback. We need beef feedback. Audio beef feedback. I have some audio beef from our friend Timing is Everything. We love Timing is Everything. And he sent us his audio message, and here it goes.
Hey guys, this is Ty, and I've been thinking a lot about the whole business of Mirko having someone copy both the gradient Damascus as well as his pattern, and with in the folder world, there are a lot of dust ups. They're like, you know, someone says it thinks that blade, someone's blade shape is like a copy or whatever. And I think it's like, you know, a little too much. But in this case, almost because amongst bladesmiths, it seems like there's a very open community. People generally actually say, like, you know, that this is like a Jason Knight style kukri or something like that, that Mirko should bring it to light and say, like, look, this is my pattern. And it doesn't have to become the, like, bullying that sometimes happens, especially on the, you know.
Cue the Ty's asking you to start bullying. I'm sorry, I had to.
I'm not calling it bullying, but you should probably bully him. Yeah.
But it's also like, you know, especially if there's a production going in, you know, I think it's just kind of good to sort of set the record straight and just put it out there. Almost, it could be, I feel like, in a nice way, but it's a little bit like sort of staking your claim for history. I think it's a particular case in that community, which I can see, like, you know, bladesmiths going to everyone's shop and, like, learning from each other, that this is a case where it should kind of just be like put out there. This guy sort of like looks like he's doing something like mine, whatever, you know? All right. Thanks.
Ty's the man. Ty's up in Washington Heights. He's chilling.
Gotcha. Nice. Appreciate it, Ty.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's got a point. He's just saying what we all think. I think, you know, it's pretty obvious what's going on here.
It's tough to stake a claim. I once, when I was making friction folders, I really wanted to make sure mine were super different from folder makers that I feel comfortable with the fact that my friction folders are different than other people's friction folders. And I remember at one point I figured out how to make a friction folder razor blade, you know, those folding box cutters where you put a disposable blade in. I figured out how to do it, and I was like, you better finish this and plant the flag. You got to post a picture about it before anybody else does. And I remember the fever of planting the flag on this thing that I still haven't kind of worked on anymore, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But
yeah,
look, business is business, you know?
Well, yeah. And when it comes to just a clear, I feel like I every once in a while I got to clear this up. The issue with the gradient is that it's a technique that I helped pioneer, that this same person made a video tutorial about on YouTube. And so essentially they're teaching my technique without even talking to me about whether that's cool with them, with me or not. And then this issue with the design, they're separate, but from the same guy. Yeah, just like not, he's basically being fucking lazy and copied my design. But yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, I've had a few people message me too directly and say, oh, you should fucking put him on blast. And it's like, again, like ultimately,
what's the point?
There's nothing to do about it. There's not, like, you can't do it. If the guy's not going to have the integrity to fucking do it himself, he's not going to fucking change right. anything. So I don't know what to do, but just fucking move the fuck on. I think something Jeff has said in the past, which is great and makes perfect sense, and I've had other people kind of reiterate this to me, is like, there are people who create and there are people who copy. And the people who copy can never keep up with the people who
they're
create.
Good though.
And there's nothing. It's all good, you can
do. They're pretty good.
No, I know, but all I can do is just fucking try to let go of it, and because what am I gonna do? Like seethe on this forever, or am I gonna move
the
fuck on?
Don't let it rob you the energy of creating more new stuff. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't listen. That's. I guess this is the only reason why I like talking about it is because like there's so many people who. They refer to themselves as artists, but then when it comes to being an artist, they don't want to be an artist. Like, it's just like you looking at the full body of your work and seeing where it, you know, when you talk about somebody's work as an artist, you're looking at their body of work and where things came from. And, you know, sure. Life makers want to be called artists, except for when you have to put the fucking artwork in of like, growing and evolving and coming from, why is this important to you and where did this come from? Where did this particular, like, I can talk about my work in a manner that's very sculptural. Like, I can talk about where the colors came from or where the stripes came from or the asymmetrical and all the shapes and everything. I feel as though I have a very strong understanding of why this matters to me. So I still get a chuckle when, not a chuckle, I get a fucking chuckle. I fucking roll my eyes when I hear knife makers calling themselves artists, because it's just like, fuck out of here. You just knocked off, you know, whatever, somebody else, and you're just pretending like it's you. It was in you all the time.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and I think that's the thing. And I think there are also probably some people who'd be like, well, that's fucking business. And it's like, well, sure. If this guy wants to, if that's how he wants to do business. I do think that, especially when it comes to the custom knife world, it's obviously other makers aren't necessarily your target market, but having a good rapport with other makers is incredibly valuable in regards to how you do in
of course.
General. But I guess it's not necessarily necessary, but it's like, why do you want to get yourself ostracized by a community that you are part of?
On an old note, my father, when he started winemaking, he had no, back in the 70s, he had no pedigree as a winemaker. And he learned about winemaking at Cornell, and then he went to France and spent time at Bollinger's and spent time becoming a winemaker. And he developed this particular strain of grape that was very, very, it was a pioneer. It was a risky move in the Hudson Valley. And he also came in with, when the Times was starting to really post a lot about food and New York food, and he became big, but he used to make a joke saying that if he ever flew back to France, they're going to hit him with a rock as soon as he got off the plane. Like, he had a lot of people not liking what he was doing abroad. He had a lot of people who he had helped inspire in the area, and locals celebrated him. But like, if he left New York, he'd get his ass handed to him. So he's just like, yeah, fuck him. They don't like it, fuck him.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is too, is like, what am I going to do? Go out there and wave my hands around and post this guy's shit up and basically draw attention to him. Where the meaner side of me would rather watch him just wither and disappear.
Dang.
and not
wither. That's dark, isn't it? That's really good.
Wither. Just look slowly wither. Or you could be like the hammer makers and just be like, you know, you got it one way. Hammer makers got it a whole other way. I mean, there's like the hammer making community is like vicious. Everybody making everybody's hammers. You know, nobody. That's why I stopped making hammers. I'm just like, well, that looks like a, you know, Bale Brentley or Brazil, Brian Brazil a hammer. And I'm like, oh, fuck this shit. Fuck that. I'm making hammers no more. Next one comes from our man, Robert Pierce Knives. He says, I was listening to a new episode on the way home, and he about Yako, our man Yako up north, says he had a KTP GPT, and he made me think of some of the best advice I'd ever heard, which is don't take criticism from someone you would not take advice from. That is a fucking good one. Don't take advice from.
Yeah, that's good. I have a bad
Story that my family was mad at me about when my daughter was very young, preschool, kindergarten. She had a teacher who was so morbidly obese. I said to my wife, how in the fuck are we supposed to listen to this person? She can't take care of her. Yeah. She can't take care of her own health. How can we take this person seriously? To the point where when the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, who is obese, I thought to myself, how's this motherfucker how can you listen to things? How can I take a lecture from this guy? Take care of himself. I gotta listen to his lecture. He ain't worried about me. He ain't worried about himself, but I gotta worry about him. Fuck out of here.
Yeah, true.
It's bad. Yeah. Hillary said, I have a fat phobia. She says, you're fat. You have a fat phobia. You're a fattest. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe.
You're
fattest. I'm a fattest. And it's not bad. It's not like I'm yelling at people. But it's just like, I'm not going to take a lecture from someone who's can't take care of their own health. Don't tell me how to live your life.
Right, but on the opposite end, you can't trust everything that somebody who's in shape
I'm not saying
says,
that, so, but I mean,
there's got to be a gradient there of some sort.
As a whole, as a person, I don't, if somebody is giving me a lecture and I find them to be on the unhealthy side, that will factor in my decisions. That will factor in.
As to what, it sounds like you're already starting to disagree with what they have to say, and so now you're fishing for reasons not to take their argument as valid.
You're at a deficit.
Valid.
You're in an instant deficit. You're already got demerits. As far as I'm concerned, I'll listen to you, but don't lecture me. Don't tell me how it is, because I'm slightly concerned. I'm concerned for your judgment. It's a judgment issue. Like, I worry about people's judgment when
that's fair.
This, you know, maybe you smoke cigarettes or you drink too much or that's a demerit. That's a demerit on my book.
Yep.
Sorry. Makes me a bad person.
We're all flawed in some way, Jeff.
Fine by me. I am too, but it's the same time. It's like your starting point starts lower and lower with me. I don't have a problem. All right, Fernandez Forge says, we have a couple Fernandezes. We have Manny Fernandez and we have Scott Fernandez. So we're going to talk about Fernandez Forge. She says, after multiple mix-ups, I've decided to change my name of my business from Fernandez Forge to not Manny Knifeworks. Fernandez Forge to not Manny Fernandez. LOL. Just kidding. Fernandez Forge is Scott Fernandez. I'm talking to you, Jeff. So, yeah, when Scott Fernandez and Manny Fernandez are great listeners to the podcast, and I fuck them up. So I apologize to both Fernandez, the Fernandez brothers. Trails Edge Knives, going from the latest episode, copycatting, when Mareko was talking about how he wished he didn't raise the prices so fast and can't drop them. I have feeling somewhat similar. Due to the prices of raw materials in Canada, plus all my time, I need to charge a pretty penny so I can make a couple bucks an hour. I realize a lot of folks can't afford that, so I've been spending a lot of time to create a budget line that has low material cost and is a much quicker process for me to make. With this, I can charge much less, and the customers will get a great knife. For example, of a time save, I bolt on scales versus my usual segmented epoxy scales. Yeah, you know, I think it's great. Well, what do you guys think?
Yeah. I think so. I think if you can make, let's say you're struggling to sell something, struggling to make money selling something that you put a lot of time and effort in to recoup this money and to make a profit. If there's a demand out there for your work, I think doing a lower, I wouldn't say a low quality, but something that requires less process that you could be done, it could be done faster, which brings down your sort of labor rate. I think that makes perfect sense. Totally.
What do you think, Bracco?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that makes sense. Especially if you have an idea of where you want a knife. Like, say I wanted to make a knife for $800. I'd have to start with that price point and then work backwards, basically, and say, well, it has to have a blade. It has to have a handle. But what do I do to bring down that price so that really the most expensive part is my hands touching that knife and doing that work. And that's anything from the grinding to the hand sanding to whatever. And so whatever I can do to minimize how much I'm touching that knife while still putting out a great product, that's what you got to do to figure out how to get a knife to fit in a certain price point.
I think we're at a time now where we can get blanks laser cut.
Right.
We could even get things heat treated, you know, elsewhere and brought to us. So, you know, if you just put the grinds in, you can even get, you know, handle materials cut out ready as well, you know, CNC'd, all to size, so you just bolting them on, that kind of thing. So, you know, the opportunity is there for makers to make things with minimal sort of time spent on them. But then is where do you build that value then? That's the thing, you know, because, I mean, anybody can go to a store and buy a $10 or $20 knife, but we're trying to build value into what we're doing and try to sort of sell that whole, the whole story behind it and the fact that, you know, these are hand-built and the quality should be, you know, so, so much better. But when you start doing that thing of putting less hand time into making them, there's always that sort of that point. It's just like, well, why am I doing this now? You know, so it is quite difficult to sort of judge that. But I think there is definitely a case for makers to make of more affordable blades by using these, you know, almost outsourcing various parts of it. You know, and we've always said there's various parts that, you know, a monkey could do. This isn't the skilled bit. Right. But they take time. So if you can outsource those,
and then
bits,
you can just write on your box that it's hand finished in your shop. That seems to be something I'm seeing a lot of, which is
possibly. As long, so I think as long as you're upfront with people about it, I think
not
I don't think there's an issue
about
with
that expression. By the way, it just seems like it's
finished.
There's no disrespect to anybody who uses it, but it's just like it's like some, you know, word gymnastics. It's just like, it's, you know what I mean? It's like a little bit of word gymnastics of just like, you know. I remember Leatherman, who is my favorite, one of my favorite companies, and I just got for my birthday, my wife got me the new Leatherman with the G10 scales. I love it. Beautiful. I think that everything they do is great. So at one point they had an ad that said button push by humans or something like that. Like it was like it was something like that. Hand pushed buttons by somebody. Something like those lines. Yeah. And I don't remember exactly what it was. It was the vibe. It was like somebody, a human being pushed the buttons to make these knives. And all I could think of is, that's some bullshit gymnastics. You don't have to put a company, you know, it doesn't need a garnish. Your words don't need a garnish. You don't need to fucking throw the parsley on there. Just service
a dry.
Yeah,
parsley.
Don't fucking try to upsell. It's like when Tony, my business partner, and I had a restaurant. We were trying to sell rock Cornish game hens. We thought it'd be fun, and we were trying to figure out ways. People just didn't like it on the name on the menu, and Tony was just like, "We should just call them preteen chickens." And I was just like, let's stop with the fucking bullshit, dog. I mean, it's just like, stop with the mental gymnastics. Yeah, preteen chickens. Yeah, you think that's going to go better? What is that, the Jeffrey Epstein special? Fuck out of here. I got nothing out of that. All right, fine. Fuck.
Before we move on, let me tell everybody all about the good guys at MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Everything you could possibly need. It's the one-stop shop for knife makers. Get all your stuff there. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools. even forges and kilns. They've got it all. So yeah, go take a look. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. And there's always a deal there with belts, so abrasive belts. If you buy 10, you get 10% off. So basically one free if you buy 10. Get over there. Yeah, support a really good company, Maritime Knife Supply.
Christmas tip, go get yourself some of the Norton Razor Stars, the yellow 36 belts. That shit will fucking cut through anything. Thing is insane. Those are my favorite belts. Oh my god, really? Those yellow, yeah, those Norton Razor Star 36s. Oh my god, you know, cut down everything to nothing. I mean, and fast.
You don't want to put a knuckle on that.
I have, and it's a bad situation, my dog. Oh. It's a bad situation, yes. My dog.
Yeah, yeah.
We have our friend Fox.
Can you stop calling me my dog? I prefer daddy.
Okay, daddy. Hey, big daddy.
If we're going to be coming up with cute nicknames for each other, just call me daddy.
Is the worst, too. Hey, big daddy. Fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I like dog. You know what I say? You know what I like? And this is a little inside, but when I was getting, you know, I was getting a lot of messages when my sister passed away. I was getting great, very thoughtful messages and stuff like that. And for some reason, I thought it would be funny just to write back, "Thanks, dog." And I just these like people send me these heartfelt things, and I would just write back, "Thanks, dog." And part of me would just.
I just put a thumbs up.
I started laughing because this one dude wrote me like the fucking Magna Carta. He spent some time writing this, and I was just like kind of not wanting to have to do a lot of back and forth, so I gave him a thanks dog. So yeah, can you get a thanks dog for me?
D-O-G nice. Or D-A-W-G?
D-O-G. I don't like, I'll be honest with you, back to the beefs. I think that when you write the way you talk, I think it's weird. Like, if you're going to write. But when you're, like, making up words and shit, like oughta or gonna, I don't do that. I might do a contraction. Yeah. I might be going to, but I don't write the way I speak. I don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
No onomatopoeia
you for do, you. You know what you do, Mareko? You do ya. You like ya. I got ya. Y-U-H. I got ya.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking at?
It's in the
what?
Dictionary.
It's not in the dictionary, yeah. Fucking yeah. You know what the best part about yeah is? I think to myself, he writes yeah. I got ya. Yeah, I got ya. Y-O-U and Y-U-H is the same amount of words. If you did yeah, A-Y-A, I would think.
That's not how I talk. I've got you.
I got you. Yeah. I got you. Yeah, you do yeah. I do never stop ya. I'm not gonna stop you, Dig Big Daddy. It's fine by me. let's just finish off this with.
Oh my God, you're right. It's not in the dictionary.
Are you crazy? You looked up "yuh." Maybe it's in like some sort of different language. Like, you know, like means like you know, like who knows? All right, so our man Fox River Blades, Jaden is. I mean, you want to talk about a dude right there? Jaden is the man. Fox River Blade says, "Hey KTP, piggybacking off your conversation about copycats on this week's episode, I also just had an experience where a random Amazon drop shipping company took my Fennec design and made very minor changes to, along with the A design from Matt Gentry. It always stings a bit to see, but this, as the saying goes, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. It makes me feel better knowing that anyone will buy. It makes me feel better knowing that anyone that will buy this ripoff wouldn't have bought a knife to begin with. But let's not forget, lest we forget, ladies and gentlemen, imitation is not the sincerest form of flattery. That's not the whole expression. For some reason, we use just half the expression. It's imitation is the sincerest form of flattery that, what is it, that, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm such an asshole. No, it's the whole thing is that mediocrity can pay to greatness. It's not, it's, so right, it's like, okay. It's like, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery and the guy who's imitating is a piece of shit, is basically what the whole thing goes.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, we've just taken,
yeah, we've taken the high ground, but it's like, yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah, the whole expression is. Mareko, you can look that one up. That's your, yeah.
I'll pull it up.
Yeah. While you do that, I'll tell everybody all about Dharma Steel. We've been working with them for years now because they make a great, great product. So if you're into Damascus and you want to be using stainless, there's only one place to go, dharmasteel.se. Beautiful, beautiful patterns. They've got a whole bunch of patterns now. And they are Dharmasteel AB on Instagram. So if you take a look there, you'll see the kind of stuff people are making with it. Always special. So if you want to level up or make a special piece, head on over to dharmasteel.se and get yourself some Dharmasteel. And I believe if you use Knife Talk at checkout, you get 10% once you set up your account there. Head on over.
Did I mention that I won a bet from Carly last week?
You did, so, yes.
Carly's...
You donated the piece.
I think the shipping to the United States is a little bit aggressive. So I said, just send it to Tomer. But yeah, so the New York Knicks, New York Knicks not only beat the Raptors, but they won the Emirates NBA Cup, and they're Emirates Cup champions, which is a meaningless tournament, but it was still fun to watch. So congratulations. And Carly sent me a very nice message, even though through gritted teeth, that she congratulated me and the Knicks. Not that I work for the Knicks. So.
Okay, I guess the quote is attributed to Oscar Wilde, and it says, "Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery that mediocrity can pay to greatness."
There you go.
Whatever
that means. That means that it's basically like you're a mediocre person, and you should see it as, you know, a person you're stealing from should see it as you're a mediocre person. Yeah, that's what it really comes down to. You're mediocre. So,
I also looked up. So the proper "yeah" is actually just "ya." Yeah, but I always read that as "yeah."
Yeah.
But yeah is probably "yeah."
That's right. If you're in Wisconsin, that's right. If you're in Wisconsin too, it's "yeah." Hey.
No, so "yeah" is "yeah," like "yeah, right, I'm ready." So
you got to keep going with the "yeah." Keep it alive, dude.
I've been missing.
Keep it alive.
It's not even a thing. It's not in the dictionary. Oh, God.
No,
I'm
you're
stupid.
Not. You're not. No, you're not.
Do you know why you're not stupid? Because you know all about TexasFireSupply.com and the discounts that you can get. If you use Knife Talk 10 at TexasFireSupply.com, you get 10% off anything that you put in your shopping basket there. So now's the time. Head on over to TexasFireSupply.com. They've got everything you possibly need. You get 10% off with Knife Talk 10.
This is the last episode of the year, and I think we're winding down. Maybe we should just kind of finish the year off in a positive way. We've been a little bit on the shitty side. I'm sorry for all you daddies out there who like to be called daddy. and we've been critical.
And all the
mommies. Fucking mommy. Oh, my God. I swear to you.
It's horrible.
Hi, mommy.
Horrible. I swear to God. That is unbelievable. So maybe we should just talk about what we're looking forward to the next year. You want to say...
Oh, there it is. And relax. Okay, let's start with you then, Jeff. What are you looking forward to next year? It's the coming 2 weeks, really, because it's a strange time of year this now, and everything sort of stops, and everything just feels a bit weird. You don't know what day it is, that kind of thing. So
I'm looking forward to a lot of things. Well, number one, we're trying to work out. My daughter is going to Japan in the spring for her semester, and we're trying to work out a way that Hillary and I can go and visit her. So we're worried about – that's one thing we're very excited about. I'm going back to Barcelona. If you want to take a class at Barcelona, I might be going from Barcelona directly to Japan. That's really kind of fucking – that would be fucking awesome.
That's amazing.
And then I'm working on this project that I will be able to talk about next week, I hope. We'll see. And I'm really looking forward to that. It'll be a milestone situation for me. And I'm looking forward to what's going on with Fader Knives. We're going to do our Christmas party on the 24th of January. I'm really looking forward to seeing my crew and eat some food. And I'm optimistic. I'm not doing any more marathons. I'm not this year at least. And I'm very optimistic that I think that hard work says it all.
Nice, Greco.
Mm-hmm. I am getting ready, or looking forward to, actually, this coming Sunday, so the Sunday after Christmas, I'm planning on doing a live Q&A with my Patreon about the gradient pattern. Like I said, it's the cat's kind of out of the bag now, so what the fuck are you going to do about it? So I'm going to be doing an in-depth conversation around the gradient and different ways that people can make use of it, because I think it's still not very clear as to how you can maximize and get the most out of that pattern. And I think a lot of people will get a lot of great benefit from that conversation. But outside of that, I'm just going to be laying low and taking it easy, and hanging out with family, friends, and just kind of relaxing. But after the start of the year, getting right back into it. And so just trying to enjoy the time that I have off right now, and try to decompress a bit, because like I've mentioned in the past, life's been a little stressful lately. And so just trying to chill, I guess.
Nice. Well, for me, I think it's that thing. It's been this sort of mad sort of few months where, you know, moving country, moving house, kids' new school. I've been really, really, really in a lot of pain. And everything seems to be slightly turning a corner. So I had this big injection this week. And I think, we're in the house. Kids are off now. Everything's just quite relaxed. And I'm loving that now, this feeling of just like, as if it really is like the end of the year. We can all take a big breath, you know? So I'm just hoping that this sort of pain sort of eases and the kids just all relax and enjoy everything, really. It feels as if we're getting to that point with, I mean, my kids, the twins are 7 now, and they're asking questions about the big man, you know? And it feels as if this could be the last of the sort of magical Christmases, you know? Yeah. We're trying to make it as magic as possible. And it does just feel that at the moment. Everything is just very relaxed and feeling very, very Christmassy. I've had my annual sort of Christmas night out that I have with all my friends back here in the UK. And it's normally a really sort of drunken, messy affair. And I spent 2 days in bed afterwards and stuff like that. I mean, that was Friday. And I woke up the next day clear as a whistle. You know, I didn't get too drunk and everything was all... Ooh. It just feels as if I've grown up a lot this year, I think. I say grown up. I feel older this year. I think that's what the thing is. Did you... Actually, we'll do this in the after show, but I come back early to watch that fight.
Jake Paul?
We'll talk about that in a second. It was embarrassing. But... I just feel we feel really content in this new house, all of us. The kids are super, super happy. And it's one of those houses, everything just feels relaxed here and it's quiet and chilled. It's all good. All good. So it's a good end to the year, whereas, as I said, the last few months hasn't been great, really. So it's all good. All good.
Nice.
Shall we call it a day? Yeah. I tell you what, we're going to have a lot of listeners. I know we've had a lot of new listeners over the last few months, actually, and they may be looking at their Christmas lists, what they want for Christmas, right? They may be getting an extra bit of money in or something like that, and they're thinking the new year, we're going to crack on and we're going to become knife makers. They're going to need a grinder, Jeff.
Oh, I know that I would get a Broadbeck Ironworks because they have great stuff. They have great modifications. They have great accessories. They have very intuitive machines. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, you can put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 and there's 10% off. Now, there also may be, they have sales going on too. So check out to make sure if they have a sale going on, Knife Talk 10 won't work. But they have great sales. They had a great Christmas. I had a nice message from Ryan Broadbeck, who was really excited. They had a really great Black Friday sale, and they're going to have more. So definitely get yourself a grinder from BroadbeckIronworks.com.
Great stuff. Okay, and with that, we wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas. Bye for now. That was cool. It was quite sort of relaxed. Yes. I like this time of day. I'm loving it. I'm sitting back. I've got a cup of tea. It's all good.
Yeah, but you get a different really Morocco. the timing, because it's like either first thing in the morning, Mareko, however, you were very awake. I could tell.
You were today. Yeah, you
were very, very alert.
You should... I've been up since. I got up at 5.
Oh, okay. Okay. What time is it there now?
7:30.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's good. You get it out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you watch that fight?
Yeah, it was...
Craig? Why? What's the point?
Well, so I got back.
Anthony Joshua and Jake Paul, right?
Jake Paul. So it's 1 a.m. So, I mean, Anthony Joshua, you know, over here, he's a bit of a legend. So it's 1 a.m. So I got the train back from Cardiff back to here. And so I sit down now. I get a, you know, get some snacks, turn it on. And it's like, well, there's 4 fights beforehand. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So I go to bed, wake up in the morning, and I watch it then. But those first 5 rounds, he was just running away from Joshua, just praying he wasn't going to get hit. It was embarrassing. And there was a point where the referee actually said, like, you know, people are paid to see this. You need to put on a fight, you know.
He actually had
to say it, you know. And Joshua could have picked him off at any point, I think. I really do think. And even though that, you know, those couple of slams at the end, I think he went light on him. I really do. It's entertainment. That's all it was. And to be honest, I think the Netflix fights that they've been on so far has been the Jake Paul and Tyson, and now this one. It's not a good name for itself, you know. It really isn't.
Yeah, I have no interest in those guys. I find it all to be gratuitous. And it's just like rooting for guys who are just going to make, you know, shit tons of money, and they're just going to – I don't really – Meanwhile, love baseball and basketball. So what do I know?
Yeah, I'll tell you what has become massive over here: darts. Darts. They have like the world championship every Christmas, and it goes on for about 2 weeks. And it's like wrestling now. They've got their little walk-on music, and they've really slimmed it down. So it's like the first of 3. So it's super, super fast, and everybody in the audience is just drunk and partying and stuff. It's really good to watch. It's really entertaining. It's a lot of that on at the moment.
Craig, what will you be serving at Christmas?
We are doing beef and turkey this year.
Beef and turkey. At your home?
Yes. So it's just us as a family. Beef, turkey, then obviously all the usual.
So how do you cook both beef and turkey in your oven? Big ass oven.
I've got 2 ovens. So is that right? 2 ovens. I'm not into sort of doing one then doing another, because I like everything to be ready at the right time. And I think that's the that's the fun of doing a Christmas dinner for me, or a big roast. That, you know, I know a lot of people, they'll cook like all these TV shows now. They're saying like, get ahead for Christmas and cook like 3 days in advance and just reheat this. And I'm like, no, you got to do it properly. Everything's got to be ready at that time, you know? So I love doing Christmas dinner. That's one of my favorite things about Christmas. So beef and turkey this year.
What kind of cut of beef is it? The prime rib or something?
Rib. Ribs. So big. Because obviously you're using all that then for the potatoes as well. So the potatoes get all that sort of beef fat in them.
I like this kind of conversation because I can hear you salivating. You're like, what about Yorkshire pudding?
Always a Yorkshire pudding, yeah.
Do you do the muffin
pies, as my kids call them? We do, yes. So they just rise up and they. And again, that's a critical thing. It can only be done at the time.
Right.
People do them the day before, then they reheat them. It's like, they're like cardboard.
It's like a popover. They have to be at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a big believer in everything for Christmas dinner. It needs to all come together at the right time, you know. And, you know, the thing was with the big roasts, they can be done a few hours before because they need to rest. Right. And, you know, and they'll stay more than warm enough anyway. I'm really looking forward to doing dinner. I always do every Christmas.
I have a big request. I need for the all beef review picture. I need a picture of you holding the tray with the big ass beef.
Will do. Okay, me and my big beef out. Yes.
Yeah. You and your big beef.
Make sure you do like the crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. Whoa, sexy mama.
Daddy's coming. Yeah. Daddy's here. Beef daddy.
Yeah. Cool. Right. Okay. Listen. Right. Have a good one, both of you.
This isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.